Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name is Scott Coyne, and I'll be your host for this episode. And I'm joined by the one and only Mr. Joris Beck this week, as ever. How are you, Joris? I'm desperately keen to hear all your thoughts and analysis on another really big weekend across Belgian football.
Well, I'm not sure if you should be, but I'm all right. I'm all right. Let's dive in and... yeah, let's see where we end.
Yeah, well, why don't we start by flipping things this week and starting with the Challenger Pro League, because the season has now ended there and we now have all the answers to all of the questions, including the outstanding ones that we didn't know last week. So the last round of fixtures, which was match week 10, saw playoff 2 being completed as well as playoff 1. The results in playoff 2, Denza beat Dender 3-2, Lommel battered SL16 6-1, and Vertoon beat Yong Genk 3-1. We've now lost Vertoon, we know this. Vertoon have been relegated. They will now play in the First National next season. Playoff 1, which still had some outstanding questions to be answered, including the big one as to who would win the title and go up. We now know the answers, Joris. Beerschot lost 2-1 at home to Liers, and in the two remaining pivotal fixtures, Molenbeek managed to get the 3 points at home in their final fixture with a 1-0 win against Anderlecht Futures, which saw Michael Byron scoring his 16th goal of the season to secure not only the Challenger Pro League title, but also promotion to the Pro League for Molenbeek. And in Beveren, they managed to get a convincing 4-1 win against Club Next, but unfortunately for them, it wasn't to be and it wasn't enough. Molenbeek are champions. They are now promoted to the Pro League, which is the first time we'll see Molenbeek, or indeed any incarnation of Molenbeek, in the top flight for 21 years. And the first time we'll have had three Brussels sides in the Pro League since 1988, Joris. So big weekend for Molenbeek, and they're probably still partying there in some quarters, I would imagine. Really big weekend. And I detected a fair note of tension in the first kind of half hour of both the games in Beveren and the game in Brussels between Molenbeek and Anderlecht this weekend. It wasn't a surprise to see the nerves on show early on this weekend. But Molenbeek managed to do it, and we're going to get a return of the Zwanze derby, the big Brussels derby between Molenbeek and Union for the first time in the top flight in a long, long time. And that's very exciting, I think, for Brussels residents and fans of these two sides. What did you make of the culmination of the Pro League, Challenger League, this weekend, Joris?
Well, to be honest, it all didn't come down as unexpected. No, everything went a bit like we had talks. Okay, it was actually a surprise that Club Next took the lead in Beveren, but they have managed to turn it around. But also the result in Molenbeek, albeit a narrow 1-0 victory, it was not unexpected, and probably they deserved that as well. And so they did the job also more before these games, I suppose. And both sides really gave it a go and did what they needed to do. So Beveren can also not really blame themselves, at least not in this game, although that's what I was going to get at. In that mutual game between Meyer Molenbeek and Beveren, I already found it weird that Beveren at the end were well not pushing harder to get a win rather than a point, or with of course the risk of losing, so that's of course why they made that choice. But it has turned out not in their favor in this time. It's one of those moments in the season, I suppose, defining moments. And they were hoping for a slip up for Molenbeek, but they have kept their cool and therefore deserve that.
Yeah, it's a tough one on Beveren, isn't it? Because, you know, any other time, both these sides would have gone up. But obviously, because of the structure of the Challenger Pro League this year, it was only one team going up. And there's been very little between them for such a long time now. I mean, when you look at the playoffs themselves, I think that first weekend of fixtures on match day one in the playoffs, Beveren lost 3-0 to Club Next, didn't they? And I think that's proved to be pivotal in the end, because there was very little between them, you know, right across the season, really. You know, both of them were kind of free scoring, both pretty good defensively for the most part. It was always going to come down to the finest of margins, and it's unfortunate for Beveren that, you know, the structure being the way as it is, they miss out. Of course, they finished the season with Tierno Barry, their, you know, really impressive 20-year-old attacking midfielder. You know, he's finished top scorer on 20 league goals, has been immensely important for them throughout the season, and it'll be really interesting to see if they can hold on to him, because although he did sign a contract extension, that there will be a lot of interest in him, we would imagine, and he could potentially become just as important to them next year. But I think probably they will feel they're in a very good place to go again next season and come up automatically, because we know that, you know, with the league restructuring changing again next season, and we'll talk about this in a lot more detail on our pre-season previews, of course, but, you know, two automatic promotion spots next year. So I think they will feel very confident of being promoted themselves next year, won't they?
They definitely will, but I'm also sure they're not going to be alone in that. So, yeah, it's a whole different beast again, I guess, next season. But, the outlook, or they start from a good point, I suppose, for that, but let's see how much of that outlook will actually be still standing there after the summer window. The summer transfer window. A lot of it might depend on that, I guess. If many players, pivotal players, would like to leave because of not getting promoted, that's of course, yeah, something that could hinder them as well. But if they can keep the core of the squad together, or most of the core of the squad together, for next season, they start in a good position, at least in that regard.
Yeah, it's very early days still, isn't it? You know, and a lot could happen between now and the start of the new season there in August. We should obviously, you know, circling back to Molenbeek, obviously, as champions, we've had a listener's question this week specifically on them from at D Pro Football, who wants to know from us, how do we think Molenbeek will do next season, and is there a lot of work to do with the squad?
Well, for the latter, we can definitely say, give an answer, yes, that there is a lot of work to do in the squad. Well, you already looked up the exact numbers. I believe you said it was 10 lone players. I only know there is a lot of lone players anyway, that they, yeah, Maya probably will not return, no, at least not all of them won't return to the club next season. Yeah, and also there is a lot of uncertainty around if Evrard, their manager, will actually stay, and that uncertainty comes from, yeah, the unclarity as well higher up in the structure, in the hierarchy of the club as well, with no sporting director a new sporting director to be appointed, also with the president and the ownership not always being on the same page, which is also clear. Well, they have to sort out definitely some things both on and off the pitch before next season. And that makes it difficult to answer that first question, of course. How will they do it next season? Everything will hinge on that, of course. But if they, again, a bit similar then for the moment as well, if they can keep some of the core of that squad together, they're a bit more of a defensive squad, and we know that defenses are important in maybe even especially inside the Belgian Pro League. They have quite a physical defensive approach a bit more in the Belgian league, in the Pro League, than in other countries, I suppose, first divisions. This could be an advantage for them, but who knows, maybe they will have a whole overhaul, and there will be a complete other type of football as well, especially if the manager would indeed change as well. So it's a bit of a shot in the dark at the moment to answer these questions.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It is very early days, you know, a bit like, you know, the when we're talking about Beveren there. I think, you know, it's interesting because, you know, you talked about me having a look at the squad in a bit more detail. And when I was having a look, I realised there's 10, 12 players there, you know, as you were saying, that loan players who are going to return to their parent clubs. And that actually works out at round about a third of their squad at the moment. Their squad's actually quite big, particularly for what was a Challenger Pro League squad. So they're going to have to do a lot of rebuilding of the playing staff, but that obviously takes on a different complexion now, doesn't it? Because you're looking at a different level. So you want a squad with a bit of depth, but also enough experience to be able to compete effectively at that level. They've already come out in the last few days, you know, Thierry Daly, the president there, has been doing the rounds and doing a lot of interviews, and he's been saying that really they're aim obviously is to compete as well as possible, but the only real target, you know, at the moment is to stay in the Pro League next season, you know, as it should be. But yeah, there's so many things up in the air there. I think, you know, the squad needs rebuilt reasonably significantly. You know, you touched on T1 Vincent Evrard. There is a very real possibility he might not still be around for the start of the season. You know, we don't know what's going to happen there yet as well. And also there are bigger infrastructure questions, like you were highlighting too. You know, the relationship between John Textor and Thierry Daly has been a little bit fractious at times, which isn't always necessarily a bad thing, but there've been some, you know, crosswords on issues there that you know would be a little bit concerning, I suppose, if from a Molenbeek fans perspective. There also isn't a technical director in place yet, so there are big question marks about the recruitment and how that's going to work over the summer. It does look as if Oostende CEO Gauthé Ganaï may very well be coming into the club to fulfil a similar role, which might answer some of those questions. We haven't had confirmation of that yet, but that's looking very likely now, coming from a number of reliable sources. So we'll see what happens there. I think the good news is, having a look at their squad, there are four pretty important players to them who I think will probably still be there, and that's De Forney, Hazard, Vorogovsky and Eris. They've been pretty ever present for them this season, and they all have experience at a higher level, so they could yet turn out to be really important for them, because that's you know, that's a spine of four really good players there. But definitely a lot of work to be done for them, and obviously that real work starts now.
Yep, definitely. And we'll just have to wait and see how their business is going in the next few months. Have a special keen eye on them.
And likewise, we'll be able to bring you a lot more detail on this as time goes on. And when we bring you our pre-season preview, we'll be able to kind of pick apart where Molenbeek are with their recruitment at that point a few weeks down the line as well. Let's move on, shall we, to the Pro League itself. Because we saw some really exciting action this weekend, particularly at the Bossall, a very, very dramatic late winner there. And we might as well start there, actually, because that's, I think, where we saw probably the most of the drama that people around Europe certainly might have been picking up on. Antwerp, top of the table, of course, managing to get a very dramatic stoppage time winner against Club Brugge at the Bossall. Clinton Mata and Hans van Aken putting Club ahead very early on inside the opening 23 minutes. And then Antwerp kind of slowly working themselves back into this game. Vincent Janssen getting one back before half-time. And then Gerano Kerk thought he'd managed to nick Antwerp a point in the 86th minute with an equaliser. But as I said to you when we were watching this, I sent you a little message, didn't I, Joris, saying, I wonder if Antwerp might push on and try and win this now, which is exactly what they did try and do. And lo and behold, in the 97th minute, young Arthur Vermeeren pops up to score his first professional goal in very dramatic circumstances to give them a 3-2 win. Incredible scenes, actually. Antwerp now won 9 of their last 10 on incredible form, as we know. We've been talking about that a lot recently, and you've got to wonder what effect that might have on them. Incredible scenes at the end there. Toby Alderweireld really enjoying that with fans, while everyone else was going berserk as well. I actually felt that the club played reasonably well this weekend, Joris. They really played their part in this game. Antwerp just started quite slowly, I felt. A much stronger second half, kind of dominated the game in the second half. And I just felt something was coming. I wasn't sure whether they would get over the line, which they did in the end. But I felt like, you know, they might have got the point, but they got so much more than that in the end.
Yeah, well, we've seen Clevenger throwing away leads all season, and unfortunately for me, at least, that still was the case again. But even after I was also texting with a Clevenger friend during the game already. He was not even following it, or at least not on screen. And I texted him, let's keep going like that after the second minute already Vanaki gave them a lead. So that was an unexpected start. And 15 minutes later, or a bit later, sorry. But anyway, they managed to get 2-0. And even then I was like, well, okay, it still can turn, especially if Antwerp can get a goal in the first half. I only managed to watch the first half as well, but by that time I already feared that this would be the more or less the scenario where the goals would fall. That's of course makes it even more special for Antwerp. But all in all, I also do not know what to make of this game in the bigger picture. On the one hand, Antwerp getting that late win will give them a boost. On the other hand, it's a game where they actually beforehand would have expected to win a bit sooner and not have that much trouble in. So like Clevenger gave more of a fight in it, especially in that first half. Than I originally expected, which for next weekend gives maybe some hope still somehow that Clevenger might get something there. Against that same side, because of course it's the reverse fixtures round this weekend for both all games in both playoffs. For first time in 10 games as well, in these 10 games, and that Antwerp scored 3 goals, which is again highlighting that they really are leaning on that strong defense, except these last few games actually. Yeah, they have conceded, but they've also managed to get back into it and win these last two games, which is crucial for them, of course. Remarkable also that it's the first time that Antwerp actually win against Clevenger inside the playoffs, ever. So that is a remarkable stat, that's another confidence boost, and I guess as well for them. On the Clevenger side, they played quite well until I suppose the lack of depth at the moment in the squad showed. The changes did them no good in the end, throwing a bit. Yeah, the young, experienced players. Of course, it might be good for them, but in this game, it didn't prove so efficient, and maybe on longer term it will be a good experience for them. Then of course in a game, like I said, they didn't really expect that anything anyway, I guess. And also, there's not much to play for anyway for them this season anymore. But some of them were not ready for the physical fight in this game. And something that's more of a consolation than for Van Aken, of course, is now the all-time pro playoff top scorer as well. And like I said, unfortunately they cannot hold a lead this season. It's already the second time as well that they throw away a 2-0 lead against Antwerp only in this season. Last time it stuck at a draw 2-2, but it's also the first time Antwerp beat Clevenger this season. Additional stat as well, but Antwerp well on course.
Yeah, club now lost all three of their playoff fixtures this season, which is a little bit surprising. Just we know they've had a disappointing season, but I don't think many of us, you know, thought they would maybe go and lose the first three of their playoff games as well. I find it interesting as well, when I was watching this game, Joris, you know, when the ball went out at the end of the game, this is in the lead up to Arthur Ramirez's winner, the ball goes out in the 97th minute for a corner, and everyone knows that the corner incoming, we saw the winner from was going to be the last action of the game. And the camera was actually on Rick DeMille when the ball went out of play, and he looked down exasperated, and you could really feel a coach who was very aware of the significance of set pieces in football, and that, you know, one of the last things you want to see as a coach is conceding a corner with virtually the last kick of the ball as well. You know, how, you know, so important are set pieces these days. He was desperately disappointed with that, and it's very ironic that that's turned out to be pivotal as well. It's interesting your point about, you know, the young substitutions, throwing in young players so late into a game where there's a major set piece is the last set play, the last kick of the ball in a game as well, is something that he's been criticised for a little bit this week, which is kind of interesting, I thought. But yeah, club have really kind of gone off the boil big time in the playoffs, which it's interesting because, you know, when you look at their performances, that there have been sections in those three games where they have actually kind of played quite well, but they've not been able to do anything with it, and it's got away from them, and I think that'd be very frustrating for Rick DeMille. But Antwerp march on and are getting increasingly close now, and there was just, I think there was a feeling, you know, I've seen Antwerp fans this week saying that they still don't want to get too excited yet, but I have seen some of them starting to kind of, you know, be able to reach out and touch it, as one of them said. But it's still kind of too close to call yet, although it's very much in their own hands. Speaking of which, we should dive over to Brussels for the other game, the game involving your side at the Josef Marien, which saw Union Saint-Gilloise running out 3-0 winners against Genk. And I'm keen to get your thoughts and analysis on this, Joris, because I was pretty disappointed with Genk for a number of reasons, probably some of them very similar to you, because in truth, Union got the 3 points here without having to work too hard for them, I think. Christian Burgess coming up with a brace, which I think is the third time he's scored a brace in his career. Hasn't got too many, but it's his third one. Genk have now lost the last two. They've not kept a clean sheet, actually, since the beginning of April. And I wanted to ask you a wee bit about them defensively. We know they've been a little bit vulnerable in recent weeks there. They've obviously conceded, I think, 10 goals in their last five. And here's the key question, really. This is what I want to get your thoughts on. Do you think Genk have lost form at the worst possible moment?
Well, they have lost form like 3 months ago, I believe, more or less. So, no. Yes and no, but that moment is going on for a long while, is my answer. Also, looking at it, I was very disappointed, and well, actually, the point that you also were going to make, and since I made it with Brugge, it was the youngsters not really turning up in the intensity, and unfortunately for the whole of Genk team, not only the youngsters at Genk, that seems to have been the case. There's a few exceptions, of course, but the squads didn't seem really ready to fight for it in this game, which is a bit worrying. Yeah, the defense, that we know that it's a bit of an issue, but on the other hand, it's also Union had an even longer streak up to this game without a clean sheet. This time they did get it against one of the teams that actually score a lot, so that's also, well, putting that a bit in perspective, it really depends. But yeah, I was a bit disappointed with Union. I'm still not super impressed with the level Union are getting in the playoffs, although Boniface, to name one player, really did stand out in this game and did play really well and was a handful. And McKenzie and Cuesta were usually relatively solid, especially individually, but they couldn't get a grasp on him. With for Cuesta, of course, it's a bit hard, of course, since he comes back into the fold. I know I've been asking for it for since a while, but yeah, here both with Cuesta and with Oyen, yeah, you can still see, like, coming into a starting 11 spot without that much rhythm in Cuesta's case, no rhythm basically, and in Oyen's case a little bit, but only from substitutions. It's not so easy, and it's maybe because of that intensity, you might, especially players coming out of injury, might lack that a bit from the start. And unfortunately, Kvista did not have a great game, to say the least. But not going to blame him for that. The whole team seemed to have a complete off day. Again, there, like you touched on the set pieces, all three of Union's goals were also coming from set pieces here. On the other hand, it might maybe not getting on the score sheet might also have to do for Genk, might have to do with the regular set piece taker, Mike Tresor, of course, being suspended in this game through his own mistake. So I'm not, that did hamper them offensively for sure as well. So to get a bit more deep in it, so this was to get more close in it, it was the first clean sheet of Union in 13 games, so that's also a very long time. For Genk, it's no clean sheets in the last 10. And I did not really get, I'm not sure what your thoughts are on this one, because I have been criticizing a bit, or maybe like saying, mentioning it at least, that Oyun also was, clearly not completely up to this game and was thrown into the deep because of that suspension, of course, as well. But getting him off, not only him off, but at the break, but also Elkanus, I'm not completely convinced it was the best choice for Franken with the whole tactics overhaul. It's good that he tried something, but I feel like he threw away all kind of creativity in that moment, which was maybe the wrong gamble to take. But okay, it's he has to do something after that first half, which was really disappointing. But I'm just wondering if that was necessary, and what the thought process was there. But anyway, it did not work out. It can happen, of course, but it might just happen. But yeah, that's still that one thing that I have a bit, not against Franke, but like it's a good and a bad thing at the same time. But he's lacking a bit of a plan B, and that showed. And that's the one thing. But his plan A I really love, but of course you need to be ready with a plan B. And for the bigger picture, I'll try to stay positive in a way. There's always every cloud has a silver lining. The away games are now done for Genk. The big ones, of course, against Antwerp Union, unfortunately, with the worst possible results. But this does mean they get both these opponents still at home. But of course, not getting any points in these games, that might be crucial for not winning the title. But well, they might just be in reach. Maybe to circle back to that form thing. If they can still find it in the right time, they need to get all points that there are to get. They need to 3 wins out of the next 3 games, which is a big ask for a team that has not won twice in a row in a very long time. But if I try to stay positive, which I will try to be, it's still very much possible, but they've not made it easy on themselves now. Also already to mess a bit with my silver lining there, of course, also these 3 games that they just had were the games where in the regular season they got 9 points out of the possible 9, and in the next 3 fixtures that is a big big fat nil out of 9. So that's that on that that if you take that as your point, that's that is not so ideal going into that. But maybe this time the Yeah, we've seen already that the regular season does not necessarily say anything about how it's going in the playoffs. But we'll see what comes. Like, I'm not expecting anything anymore, but I'm not completely giving up. I know I told you guys that during the game against Union, I think at the moment of the penalty. But yeah, that was really about during that game. In that game, I did not have any hope. But let's see how it goes coming further in these next 3 weeks. And well, maybe it's already done in officially done in a week. Maybe.
Yeah, I think the truth is it's kind of all still to play for, yeah, and we know that things can turn very, very quickly. And obviously match day 4 of the playoffs is coming up this weekend with the reverse fixtures, as you're saying, and depending on the way they fall, the picture could change completely again. So it's still there, and I think that's probably going to be Rankin's message to them. Look, you know, we've been a bit disappointing, we're feeling a bit frustrated, but, you know, we're not done yet. And I think it's important that he drives that point home to them, really, because that could hold the key to you know, one result could change everything again as well. You know, so exciting is at the moment with still 3 games to go. And your points as well, you know, you were asking me what I thought about, you know, the Elkanous substitution and Oyen. Oyen, obviously, not fully match fit, very difficult throwing him in from the start, which I think was the only option they had, and asking him to perform at the level that we know he can in such a big game. I mean, the Joseph Marien is one of the hardest places to go in Belgium and get a result, so that was always going to be difficult, and he wasn't really able to impact the game at all in any meaningful way. And the Elkanous substitution was I think that surprised everyone, that one, actually. Although I kind of understand it, I think Rankin was a bit frustrated and disappointed with that first half display, clearly, and felt like he needed to make some reasonably significant changes to try and, you know, turn the game back in their favour, and they didn't quite work out for them. But I think, you know, the whole squad really weren't really at it at all this weekend for whatever reason, and, you know, it'll be a hard work on the training ground for them over the last few days. I don't suspect that. But as I was saying, it's all there, and it could yet turn. Speaking of turning, on to playoff 2, at Slessen, we saw a game between Standard Liège and Westerlo, which very much did turn, particularly in stoppage time at the end, Standard managing to get themselves into a 2-goal lead during what was actually a very even game for the most part, goals coming from Filip Zinckernagel and Reino Imon for Standard. And I think they probably thought, as did their fans, that they'd won it, but they didn't. They threw away 2 stoppage time goals, and the game turned very dramatically in the 92nd and the 95th minute, with goals from Edison Jordanov and Thomas van den Kibus. Real sucker punch for Standard, because that pretty much puts an end to any hopes they had of winning these playoffs, Joris.
Yeah, and just in general, the whole playoff is most likely, at least, put to bed. Well, and anyway, there is an option that it's official already this weekend as well. But we'll talk about that later, because that has to do with another game. But this one did definitely fumble Standard chances, and Westerlo is now already officially out as well. They cannot reach the 5th spot anymore, so they will not be playing in Europe next season. I don't think anyone still expected that, but they did manage to throw some salt in the wound for Standard, in the machine for Standard, with these late 2 goals. To be fair, it was a deserved draw for sure. That second half from Standard was, even when they still scored a goal at that time, that was already a bit lucky, I suppose, that they could get that. It was one of the few moments that they had in that second half. And Westerlo, they probably should be slightly disappointed. Of course, since the way it turned out, they snatched a point as good, but like I said, they're now out of the race, and I feel like they had a shot of winning this game, and unfortunately the goals for them the goals fell a bit late, they did manage to get a deserved draw. Let's put it like that as well. It's quite even indeed. Also, the total shots off target, and both shots off on target and on target are the same numbers for both teams, with a little bit of higher quality of those shots for Westerlo. But they also hit the post. Yeah, on the other hand, they did get lucky with that second goal, which was was meant as a cross, I'm sure. So and went in and really silenced the Sclessin, the whole Sclessin because everyone knew the implications of that call, of course. And going into this stoppage time, I'm sure they were thinking the game was won. But it's well, I was joking a bit, jokingly attacking you a bit in at that, I guess, as well, since you mentioned that Standar had definitely must have learned some things in over the course of the season under Dela. Unfortunately, they sure did, and Dela did a good job, but there's still some teething problems for sure. Still going on, and giving away leads, like I mentioned, that it's also a trademark of Standard this season, especially in games that really seem to be won already, and not necessarily against the biggest teams. With all respect for Westerlo, but also like in these playoffs, they are the smaller team and were in the worst position before the game started, and it showed again, I guess.
Yeah, I would definitely not like to have been in that home dressing room at Slessen after this game to hear what Ronnie Dyla had to say, because it was interesting. He came out actually after the game, and in his post-match press conference, he was talking about how difficult it was to take throwing the game away like that, and how he as a coach had never experienced anything like that before. And I think he did allude to the sort of psychological damage that had on both him and the players. He did take that kind of quite hard. Consistency, obviously, something he's been talking a lot about this season, because he knows that's going to be key to building Standard back up. And we have, as you were saying, seen moments where they've looked more fragile than they should, and that result there absolutely probably typified that, arguably more than any other result they've had this season, and puts an end to things for them. Another club with a lot of work to do over the summer. They've already started with some of that. So we'll return to talking more about Standard a lot again on our big pre-season preview. We should move on, actually. The final game of the weekend in the playoffs was at the Jan Breidel. It saw Cercle taking on Ghent running out, convincing 4-0 winners in the end. Hugo Kuipers getting his 22nd goal of the season, opening the scoring for Ghent. And then we saw a certain Mr. Gift Orban scoring a second half hat-trick inside a 16-minute period. He has now got, and I know we've talked about how amazing his season has been, that was his hat-trick of hat-tricks. Interestingly enough, not many times you see that from a player, no matter how good their season is. He's now got 19 and 19 across the season, 14 in the league. And when you think about that in context, actually, Joris, this is a player who only joined in January. You've got to wonder where Ghent might be and how their season could have gone if he'd been there from the start. Because I think his goal scoring ratio is now better than it was in Norway with Stabæk, which is kind of quite incredible. And a lot of the footballer guys of the world, particularly in Europe, remain on Gift Orban. And I did wonder after this game. I thought, and lots of people inside Ghent, I'm sure, will be asking, what could their season have been like had he been there earlier? And from a Cercle perspective, before I get your analysis, I felt they weren't really as strong this week as they have been most of the season in kind of key areas. I thought they got caught out in a number of times, particularly with long balls that they probably shouldn't have, pretty basic things. And their general defensive structure, which has been so strong this season, just kind of wasn't quite there. So they'll be really, really disappointed with this. And I do wonder as well how red cards always have a big bearing in games. But this red card for Cercle that Kristen Ravich got after 22 minutes will be hugely frustrating, I think, for Miron Muslic. And he picked up a yellow card, actually, from the referee himself, having some cross words with the officials after the second yellow, because he picked up two yellows within about a minute and a half. The first one, it was a clear yellow, obviously a major shirt pull which was the correct call. The second one, although technically a yellow card, was interesting. I'm interested in your thoughts on this as well, Joris. I mean, did you think that was a definite second yellow straight away, or do you think the referee should have showed a little bit more discretion, if you like, and allowed him a little bit leeway with that one? Because the game was actually very close up to that point, and then the momentum shifted, didn't it?
To me, that is a clear yellow card, second yellow card, and I do not get the whole frustration. I do get a bit of frustration from Cerkel, of course, but I do not get the whole scenes about it, to be honest. Yeah, that's my point of view. I found both yellow cards more, yeah, not smart, I guess. They for me, both of them are clear-cut yellow cards. The point was for the second players we're making was also more about like the throw-in leading that in the end led to that second yellow card not being the right call. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen that, but also, yeah, of course, that's not the right point to aim at anyway. Such wrong calls, it's not a good thing, but they happen, and in theory they should play a minor role. Yes, now it didn't, but not because of that throw, necessarily because of the throw-in, but just because of, to me, a clear foul for a second yellow card, honestly. And unfortunately, yes, they did influence that whole game. Last week we were still saying, yeah, Cirque are a team that has matched up really well with Gent. Unfortunately, that did hamper that, of course, a bit as well. But yeah, Orban is now 3 hat-tricks away from being top scorer as well. So he's 3 games to go. So who knows? Maybe it is still possible for him to catch his teammates, and maybe Ueda, of course, who is still in that race as well. And even more amazing that I found on that is 12 out of his 14 league goals actually came from away games. So he doesn't like to play at home in the Galanco Arena, it seems. But that's a I found that interesting. Doesn't need to say anything necessarily, but and Gent now all but certain of being fifth for the third season running, I believe, actually, and in Europe, with now 7 points ahead, with only 9 to be divided, and also they have the advantage of a point of deduction, so actually it's 8 points ahead, so they only need 2 points to be mathematically certain, so they don't even necessarily need to win any game anymore. But if they do win one, it's also over for sure. And yeah, regarding the question with Orban, well, I guess it's as useful as sorry to put that down on me, but like on myself or my team, like what if Onuachu would have stayed? I would have liked to see both these players fight for the top scorer title, although that could have been something as well. But yeah, it's pointless to ask these questions. But as a thought and exercise, yeah, well, we'll never know anyway, I guess, and we'll see. If he keeps scoring, the chances of him staying longer in the league are getting smaller and smaller, I fear.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of eyes on Gift Orban, as I was saying, in a lot of leagues, and it's going to be very interesting to see what movement, if any, there is in the summer there, because there could, emphasis on could, because you know things can change yet, but there's the very real potential of quite a tasty bidding war for a player like that. And like you say, you know, when you look at his season so far, I don't think anybody should really bet against him going very close to ending up being the top scorer, because, you know, if he follows through the form he has done up till now, then he could bizarrely go very, very close to that, an incredible season. And a great week for Big Hein, who had a lot to say about the Buffalo's injury worries going into this game, and in recent weeks as well, talking about how they've had a difficult season with injuries, and it's been very stop start and disruptive for them. See, he'll be delighted to have more or less sealed playoff two, as you were saying, earlier than I think any of us thought they would. They've been very impressive and like you say, doing it almost for, not confirmed yet, of course, you'd stress that, but it's looking very like playoff two is done now.
Another useful thought exercise is, of course, what if Gent would have played much like Beverley Molenbeek at that final game between them, What if Kent would have pushed for that win against Mechelen and maybe would have been in the, yeah, well, if De Brugge and Gent were, well, swapping places inside the playoffs, how would they have looked like? It's a useless thought exercise, and we'll never know, but it makes you wonder, by given the ease that Gent is playing through in the end, these playoffs so far, but it looks like, yeah, that they will feel that.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's a lot of what if and sliding door moments in relation to the Buffaloes at different points this season. Speaking of sliding doors, actually, we did get a big bit of news today, actually. St Truden have finally appointed a new T1. They've appointed 55-year-old German coach Torsten Fink, who, very well-known figure, actually, former midfielder, of course, played for Bayern Munich, made 236 appearances for them in his playing career between 97 and 2006. He won the Champions League, of course, with Bayern in 2001, and was part of the Bayern side that lost very dramatically to Manchester United in the Champions League final in 1999. He's actually got quite an interesting CV as a T1 Joris. He's been the Red Bull Salzburg development coach. He's had periods at Ingolstadt, Basel, where he won two league titles and a Swiss Cup. Hamburg, Apoel Nicosia, Austria Vienna, Grasshoppers in Switzerland, Vissel Kobe in Japan, where he won the Japanese Emperor's Cup and then the Japanese Super Cup as well. And most recently, he spent a little bit of time at Riga in Latvia and Al Nassr in Dubai. So St. Truden have appointed the second German after Bernd Hollerbach, as we know, who's just left. And I think I might start referring to Torsten as Fink the Bink, Joris. What do you think?
Ooh, another cheeky rhyme put in there. I'm not a huge fan of such things, but I do get why people do that. Of course, that's a personal taste. To me, it's clear that spell in Japan has something to do with it, especially with... Lee Vermaelen also being linked to that Cinderella position. Already there, I was thinking, might that have to do with his time in Japan? And now his former coach at Vifokova, has taken up the position here as well. So that's good for him. I going back to this plot, to the last few things that he did, the spells in Riga and in Al Nassr, they were both really short spells, so that made me already wonder, is he really the right man? Of course, before that, his more Western European spell and also actually his spell in Japan was reasonably successful. Like I like to say a lot here, is we'll have to wait and see, I guess.
Yeah, so that is definitely another one of those, because it's still very early, but it's interesting that we've now got confirmation of that appointment, because St. Truden have been, haven't they, a bit like Open Joris, one of those clubs where there feels like there's so much up in the air, and every day that goes by and there isn't a definitive decision about, you know, major things like who the T1's going to be, then you feel that time's been lost. But it's an interesting appointment, because like I was saying, he does have a pretty experienced CV, and he's won some things both as a player and as a manager, and we know that they're not going to be investing in a particularly significant way at St Truden. They are going to be relying on more on younger players and new loans with, you know, a blend of experience and youth as well. And he does have some decent experience of working with young players, so it'll be interesting to see if they can rekindle that recipe of, you know, a strong sort of defensive base and an attack that does have a threat. Obviously, they've lost Gianni Bruno now, who was really significant throughout the course of this season to them. So they are a number of clubs who probably are going to be quite vulnerable next season. And we say this, obviously, ahead of their summer recruitment. So this picture can completely change in that time. But at the moment, they do still remain a little bit vulnerable, because there is a little bit of work certainly to be done with reshaping that squad. But they've gone with somebody ultimately who has good experience and experience of working with young players, which is going to become very important. So we'll see how they get on with all of the recruitment over the summer.
Yes, definitely. Well, yeah, the good thing, I guess, is that they, even though it's later than they originally had said, they have the manager in place now, which might still be in a good time. But yeah, now the recruitment will be really everything.
Yeah, well, indeed, like it always is. It always is. I think that's just about all we've got time for this week, Joris. If you do enjoy what we do, please do consider leaving us a wee review on your podcast platform of choice. It helps new listeners find us as well, which is really important to us. And of course, you can always get in touch with us each individually, hunt us down on social media, and do keep your listeners' questions coming, because we love getting them here at the BFP, and we love featuring them and kind of getting to grips with those. And we've had some really, really brilliant ones in the last few weeks. So thanks so much for them. Do keep them coming. Likewise, thanks for your company, Joris.
Yeah, as always. Welcome as always, and always a delight. Hopefully I will also be celebrating a bit more this upcoming week when we meet again. More importantly is, of course, hopefully we will be a trio again, and Ben will be joining us next week. Most likely he will, I'm sure, enjoy the rest of the playoff games now.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll see where we are, where the wheel is pointing next week, shall we? And as Joris was saying, with any luck, hopefully the full trident of myself, Joris, and Ben will be back with you next week. So take care, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll speak to you again soon on another episode of the BFP.